Yeah. Yeah.
Blue is the wavelength that gets scattered the most.
Mm-hmm.
And when compared to red, the blue wavelength is scattered more, and that's why during the afternoon we are able to see the sky is blue. But during night, during twilight basically, the scattering is so much that it's so scattered and it does not reach us, so we can't see it. Only the scattering of the red light reaches us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we see it red.
Right. Okay, so there are two issues with respect to scattering and absorption. So blue, I think one of the graphs here show that Rayleigh scattering, it's just sort of a curve over here. It is a function that depends upon lambda to the power of 4. Okay, so if you are higher, lambda to the power of minus 4. Okay, so if you're lower wavelength, you tend to be scattered more. Okay, so in this sense, blue is on the left. Okay, as you go ultraviolet and so on, ultraviolet is absorbed. Okay, but at the high end of the spectrum, visible spectrum, you have high degree of scattering. Okay, and also if you look at the atmospheric windows, they also tend to be absorbed. Okay, but blue tends to be scattered a lot, and therefore it sort of lights up the sky as blue. Okay, in the evening, you're right that because the sun is sort of far away, you have blue doesn't even travel that far because it's absorbed, and the lower wavelengths, red, etc., actually travel. Okay, and therefore, so it's sort of a tussle between the propagation characteristics and the scattering characteristics. Okay, that's very good. Okay, okay. So both these absorption. Okay, I think we should say absorption and scattering. Both of them lead to attenuation. Okay, so attenuation, as you know, I throw so much power onto the fiber, on the other side, how much power comes out? Okay, signal becomes shorter. So the story in fiber is that depending upon the types of fiber, you have a decrease in general with wavelength. As you go larger wavelength, in this sense, as you go more and more towards infrared, you have better and better attenuation characteristics. Okay, and in fact, you have around the 1300 nanometers, it's pretty good, and then the attenuation drops even further in the 1500 nanometers for the single mode fiber. Okay, and this is why you prefer to operate in these windows. Okay, interestingly, if you go even further, because of material dispersion, absorption in silica, etc., the attenuation dramatically increases again. Okay, so essentially, this is what we call fiber transmission windows. Okay, so if you have a medium in which you're trying to transmit, you have different regions you can transmit better. So, in fact, you know the best region to transmit light is vacuum, because it has none of this junk. Okay, so. So it doesn't have all this attenuation, dispersion, all this, nothing to disperse it. It's only, these are all interactions with the medium. So you know what's best? You can create a nanotube fiber and basically suck all the air out of it. It's a vacuum, perfect vacuum. And light can just go within it and it'll be internally reflected, etc. Okay, and you'll be interested to know that these kinds of things are being researched at RPI. Okay, so in the Nanotechnology Center, they are researching carbon nanotubes, and they've recently discovered that they can have huge and long strands of carbon nanotube which can be formed. So nanotube fiber in which you don't really use a medium which has all these sort of idiosyncrasies, but just take out all the air, just transmit in pure vacuum. That's the best you can do. Okay, so that means you can open up a much larger band for transmission. Think of what you can do. You can actually do wave division multiplexing over such a large band. Today you do wave division multiplexing in such a small, in 50 nanometers. Okay, it actually translates a huge amount of bandwidth, like 25-30 terahertz. But if you transmit in pure thin air, you can actually have huge bandwidth in which you can do lots of very interesting things if you want to transmit in vacuum. Okay, and that is actually some of the future things which are going on. Okay, and if you're interested in that type of research, you should certainly look into that. Another thing to note is that, again, this is fiber and this is not free space in the sense, this is not atmosphere. If you want to do free space optics, the characteristics are very different. They have different absorption windows, they have different transmission windows, etc. So we have another project on free space optics where, I mean, some of the things you do in fiber you might want to do in free space optics, but some of the things you do in fiber you might not also want to do in free space optics. One of the issues is that fiber is made out of silica, which has a refractive index of roughly 1.5, whereas air has a refractive index of close to 1. So as we study this chapter today, we'll see a lot of dispersion effects, chromatic dispersion, etc., and these issues are not a big deal in free space optics, where these are issues with, which talk about dispersion, refractive index variation, and those kinds of things. So, okay, if your refractive index is close to 1, there's not really much of a refractive index variation, etc. Okay, so I think it should be noted this is it is specific to the particular waveguide called fiber. Okay, which is made out of silica, and even here it's important to understand that you have very small windows, but that itself gives us such a tremendous amount of bandwidth which you can tap into. Okay, so there are names for these things. Okay, so this band is called a shortwave band around 800 nanometer. This was the old early fiber. It had a small dip over here, and you notice here that the dip here was around 4 dB per kilometer, and that was a big deal in those days. Okay, today we are talking about 0.2 dB per kilometer as the attenuation windows. And in the early days, 4 dB per kilometer is much, much better than the copper and microwave transmissions which were attempted those days. Okay, so that's when fiber initially started being deployed in the 70s, and later people worked on the 1300 nanometer, also known as 1.3 micrometer band. You have a band here where you have a dip here, you see, and then you have a fairly favorable dip here in the 1500 band, and this band itself is broken into multiple sub-bands, as we should learn a little bit later. Okay, and you see here there is a small peak here. Okay, and this peak is because in fiber, as far as the manufacturing process, there is still some water left in fiber. Okay, and these OH molecules or OH ions absorb at this particular frequency. Okay, or at this particular wavelength. So, as you know, all atoms and so on, they have their characteristic resonant frequencies. So, if you send any frequency which is equal to the characteristic resonant frequency, or depends upon the band energies in terms of photons, in terms of the particle behavior, they will absorb at those bands. Okay. So, different materials absorb at different bands. So, and in this particular case, water molecules are in particular OH minus ions absorb in this band. So you would have liked to have a nice include this band for use, but you cannot. Until recently, in 1998, there's been a new commercial fiber available from Lucent called the all-wave fiber, which essentially flattens out this by a new manufacturing process. So see, as we shall see that as we study and understand fiber and light characteristics and light matter interactions, that understanding helps us design fiber or design components which can overcome these apparently impossible issues to take care of. Okay, so today it's also possible to actually have a new window, but unfortunately, all the optoelectronics has been designed for these windows. So there's been this is sort of a catch-22 situation, which you need both the optoelectronics which needs to be matched and also the fiber which needs to be matched and carefully designed. So a lot of investment today is in the 1550 nanometer band. And we shall talk about a lot of that today, both these lectures. Oh, one comment about the lectures. Next week, I have not verified this, but there is apparently a GM week, okay? And if you're undergrads, you probably know much better about this. So I got a notice, which I didn't look at carefully, but it said that on some of these days, the afternoon classes are cancelled or something like that. So there's some likelihood that we may or may not have classes, okay? My preponderance is to show up for class. But please watch out for the mailing list, and we will make an announcement whether the class is cancelled or not. Okay. So if there are going to be GM week activities, probably we do not have the class. Okay. So some of the even within the 1550 nanometer band, you see there's this dip here, and there are sub bands here. One is known as the S band, the C band, and L band. Okay, so most of the work which we should study is in the C band. Okay, C also stands for conventional. okay, for whatever reason, okay. And L stands for long wavelength band, okay. So it's basically an extension of the C band, which extends into 1600 nanometer, etc. So all the fancy technologies like the optical amplifiers, EDFAs, and so on operate in this band, but they have been specialized to be extended to this band as well. Okay, so even within this band, you can actually pack a lot of wavelengths and do wavelength division multiplexing. Yep. Excuse me. Okay, but even this band has a lot of bandwidth. Okay, if you look at it in terms of wavelengths, in terms of nanometers, it's not much. But if you do the math, okay, here's the relationship basically if you want to do this. Can we point to this, please? Let's see. So we know that frequency is equal to C by lambda, right? So if you want to see what is the bandwidth or delta of frequency, okay, you just have to differentiate this equation. So you'll get something like lambda square multiplied by delta lambda. So when I say a band which has, say, 10 nanometer, okay, you should ask at what wavelength do you have 10 nanometer. So this 10 nanometer, if it occurs at 1.3 micrometer or if it occurs at 1.5 micrometer, is a substantial difference in what is the actual wavelength, what's the actual bandwidth you'll get. So we are talking about roughly 100 nanometers here, a band of 100 nanometers at from 1530 to 1560 or up to 1660. Okay, so this range is about 100 nanometer which you plug in here and you sort of do the math here. You'll see that the bandwidth you'll actually get is several terahertz. Okay, it's like 35 terahertz of bandwidth. Okay, and what we really care about is the terahertz, and if you can be even reasonably efficient in that, like get 1 bit per hertz, okay, you can get 35 terabits per second out of the system. Okay, that's the potential here. Okay, and I mean, real systems are a little bit inefficient. They are about 0.6 bit per hertz, and they also sort of eat up some guard bands, etc. But even then, you have lots of bandwidth. Okay, so the other limitations on practical bandwidths is the availability of amplifiers. Okay, we shall study optical amplifiers in great detail, but one thing you should notice is that some of these amplifiers have bands. Okay, they operate only in certain bands, and these bands are always expanding, but they also depend upon different effects. Okay, so some effects are like stimulated emission of radiation, and the other effects are nonlinear effects called Raman effects, etc. Okay, so some of these effects are broadband effects. Okay, that is, Raman effect, for example, can affect a 15 terahertz band. Okay, so you can, whereas the EDFA stimulated emission is a very, narrow band effect. So it's not that narrow band, actually it's quite broad in the sense. I mean, so depending upon what the effects are and what the materials you're using, the amplification is possible only in different bands. Okay, so what has happened is that EDFA has really taken off, and Raman amplifiers are used to complement EDFAs. So there's been a lot of investment in this band, the 15 nanometer band, and it's fairly low attenuation, etc. Okay, so, and so suddenly if you want to use a wider band, etc., you don't have the existing equipment. Okay, so this is an important consideration as you consider the economics of these things, because one EDFA costs $500,000. Okay, so these things sort of add up if you keep putting these things after every 100 kilometers, so on. Okay, so there are, the popular amplifiers are EDFAs and Raman amplifiers, and there is a new version of EDFAs called gain shift EDFAs, which operates in the L band, that is in the larger band. So Raman amplifiers can operate in multiple bands, the S band, C band, L band, etc. Okay, so the sort of, end of the story is that for fibers, because of the material, the way it has been designed and so on, and because of the fundamental effects like scattering and absorption, etc., there are two major windows, 13, 10 and 15 nanometer. So all the components, optoelectronic components like sources, detectors, receivers, amplifiers, filters, everything has to operate in these bands. Okay, these are the key windows. Okay, and now you know why these windows exist. And you know why these windows can go away if you take new fiber technology. Okay? And to give you an idea of what can be done, a lot of as ISPs sort of dig and lay fibers, when we say they lay fiber, actually they lay pipes, okay, or conduits, or these are sometimes known as cables, okay, and each cable, you can have many fibers, and many cables are actually vacant. So tomorrow if somebody comes up with the sort of nanotube fiber, they can actually throw this nanotube fiber there, so there is a potential for new technology to be rolled out, okay, and people are becoming more sophisticated when they actually lay fiber, because that is when they actually incur most of the cost. So there is scope for new technology innovation to do more things. Okay, right now, because there is a huge glut of capacity in the core of the internet, and we have not solved the last mile of the internet, there's no demand. Okay, but once we solve the last mile and get terabits from coming from the last mile into the core, I mean, there will be demand for the next generation technologies. Okay, that's why it's still exciting to work on those things. Okay, so people are working, to give you an idea of what's going on, people are working on quantum dot lasers and extremely small lasers and things which work in far infrared. And these kinds of things have beautiful propagation characteristics in free space and also in thin air. Okay, but they're not very great for operating on existing fibers. They could operate on new fibers or just the sort of nanotube fibers and so on. Okay, so that's what we are interested in. So now let's look a little more carefully into fibers. So by the way, this slide set is an expanded version of the slide set I used the other day. That is in the previous class, so you should make sure you have the new handouts. Okay, so what is fiber and why does it look the way it looks? Okay, so it is circular in shape, okay, and it has a bunch of concentric circles, as you can see here. This is a cross-section of a fiber. And there is a core, okay, which is made out of silica. And then there's a cladding around it, which is made out of doped silica. Essentially, it has a slightly different refractive index. Okay, you should note that the refractive index is different, but the difference is not substantial. Okay, and the reason is for reducing the number of modes which propagates in fiber. Okay, so the way fibers are manufactured, we have Corning quite close to us here, and there are several places in New York State where fiber is manufactured. The way pretty much what they do is they use extremely pure silica, and then they use a sort of a donut-shaped furnace and essentially draw these fiber through a coating. And this part of the manufacturing process, they carefully add dopants to the fiber essentially create a refractive index profile. As we shall learn later, the refractive index profile of the fiber can either reduce the number of modes if you have multi-mode fiber, or it can do some fancy stuff to essentially, even a single mode fiber, you can have chromatic dispersion and so on. You can shape the refractive index profile of the fiber to deal with that. And this block here is where you do all that fancy stuff. Okay, and then you want to make sure that the fiber is perfectly round, okay, or cylindrical in shape. So that is one very important thing. And then you just cure it and then draw it. Okay, that's as simple as that. Okay, and when I say fiber, people sometimes think it is like glass and it's highly brittle. Okay, so it turns out that fiber is even stronger than copper and much, much stronger than glass, okay, in terms of tensile strength. Okay, you can't easily sort of kill it. Okay, so, typically the words which are used are fiber routes. ISPs lay out, there are several fiber routes, and each fiber route has several cables. Cables are nothing but the sort of envelopes of fibers, and you can have up to between 100 to 1,000 fibers on each of them. Okay, and each fiber is like a very, very small thing. Okay, I don't know, they have a diagram here. So each fiber is like a few hundred micrometer across. Okay, it's like less than, thinner than your hair. Okay, so you can think of it, if you have such a big cable, you can like pack lots of fiber in it. Okay, but there are issues about how many fibers you can pack together and so on. So you can pack a lot of fibers in a cable. And each fiber may have several wavelengths. Okay, even if it's a single mode fiber, we shall understand the difference between modes, wavelengths, and so on. You can have a number of wavelengths around which you can have transmissions. And today, commercial systems have up to 160 wavelengths on which you do wave division multiplexing. Okay, there are trade-offs in terms of how many wavelengths you want to use, how much speed you want to go on each wavelength. And there are issues as you go higher wavelengths and number of higher speeds on every wavelength. Okay, but today cutting-edge research is looking at 160 wavelengths, okay, and they are looking at 40 gigabit per second and higher transmission. Okay, so when they go higher speeds, they typically reduce the number of wavelengths. Okay, so there's sort of a trade-off there because of several of the nonlinear and other effects which we shall learn about. Okay, so the basic things you learn in fiber, I mean, you must have seen this stuff before, but the first thing you learn about fiber is that depending upon the size of the core, okay, you can have a single mode fiber or a multi-mode fiber. I think we reviewed what is the idea of a mode earlier. Okay, a mode, briefly, is just the solution to Maxwell's equations of how light propagates in a fiber. Okay, and I gave you a sort of qualitative understanding of what a mode is. As in ray optics, we think of total internal reflection as light cross goes inside a fiber. Okay, but then at every point, okay, where the mode hits the cladding, okay, the you should have essentially should have a standing wave between these two points. Okay, so only you can only have a finite number of modes. You cannot have an infinite number of modes where you have exactly a standing wave, or you have a boundary condition where, say, the amplitudes are zero, etc. What that means is that it should be an integral multiple of half wavelength, okay, or full wavelength. So if I have a wider fiber, you can have light which gets coupled and basically goes in multiple directions, right? So not all the infinity of modes will go, there's only a finite number of modes which are possible. Now, interestingly, if you make the fiber small, the core smaller and smaller, and when you make the core around 8 to 10 micron, this depends upon the fact that silica has a particular refractive index, and you're using a particular wavelength of fiber, a wavelength of transmission, a wavelength band of transmission, only one mode will go through. Okay, that will be the fundamental mode. Okay, so, and that mode goes straight. Okay, it just goes straight on the on the axis of fiber. Okay, so what happens? Why is multi-mode a big deal? Okay, because the energy, which is in a pulse, in a time domain, you create a pulse which is one or zero. Okay, it has energy, right? Light energy, and that energy is actually distributed among multiple modes. And when these modes show up on the other side, they have traveled different distances, and so they will have a time spread. And we talked about this last time also. So your bit gets spread, okay, in time. So this is known as, and if it spreads longer and longer, it will basically interfere with the next bit. So this is known as inter-symbol interference. Okay, the bit is also known as symbol. Okay, after you've done your modulation. So this occurs in all forms of dispersion. Okay, so that's why fiber transmission is said to be dispersion limited. Okay, whereas in free space transmission, it is only attenuation limited. Okay, so there are less reasons for dispersion in free space than in fibers. Okay, because you're wave guiding it, you can have multiple modes. Okay, and now even if you have a single mode, okay, you're actually transmitting a band of wavelengths. Okay, it's because you're transmitting fairly broad band. As I said, it's 35 terahertz of bandwidth is going through. Okay, now each wavelength can travel at different speeds. Okay, and this is known as chromatic dispersion. Chromatic means color. Every wavelength is a different color, right? And it can travel at different speeds because energy of the pulse is at different wavelengths in the spectral domain. The pulse is going to spread even because of that. Okay, so that is called chromatic dispersion. Okay, and we shall start looking at all those issues in a moment. Okay, but single mode fibers are obviously much more preferred to multi mode fibers. Okay, but it tends that all the equipment for single mode fibers are much more costlier. Only recently has there been a revolution in a technology known as VCSELs, which also give you much more cheaper equipment as single mode fibers. And we shall talk about all of this in a moment. Okay, so here's a summary of fiber. So the diameter of a fiber is roughly 125 micrometer, and the core, it can be anywhere from 50 micrometer if it's a multimode fiber, and the remaining part is just the cladding. And you have, for a single mode fiber, it's between 8 to 10 micrometer, and you have some other junk around it, means protection layer and so on. Okay, so what does modes look like? Okay, modes are, when you actually look at fiber, these occur only due to lasers. LEDs are non-coherent, so you don't see this. In a laser, when you look at multi-modes, here's how they look like. Okay, these are all solutions to Maxwell's equation, and they have very pretty shapes. Okay, so when you look at a fiber and you take a cross-section of fiber and you look at it, you'll see all these shapes, and as you have dispersion of these shapes, okay, this occurs at the entrance to the fiber. These beautiful modes occur at the entrance of the fiber. When the thing is transmitted for a while, these things disperse. Okay, and I think I showed you an earlier diagram somewhere called speckle patterns. Okay, I just want to show it to you once more. Somewhere here. When they have transmitted for some time, you see there's some dispersion of each of these modes. Okay, and these things can also change randomly depending upon a number of issues. Okay, either there's modal dispersion or the amount of energy that's coupled between different modes can be different. So you can have these things which vary randomly in time. Okay, so this especially in multimode fiber. So figure out how you can get a bit out of this. Okay, so so you want to take all this and get a bit out of it. Okay, that is why the spectral, that's why the efficiency, coding efficiency is very, very low in these things. Okay, let's see where was I. Okay, so I don't want to go into the details of these things. Okay, this is, for example, it's called a TEM mode. There are LP modes and so on. Okay, so if you study, take a course on fiber optic communication, you study all these things in greater detail, and there are courses on like that in this thing. So the bottom line is that you'd like to go for single mode. Okay, and single mode is getting cheaper and cheaper. Okay, and you'll be surprised that there's a lot of single mode fiber on campus itself. Okay, so it's used both in local area, like campus area networks, as well as long distance communication. Okay, so as you want to go higher and higher speeds, you start going beyond copper into this thing. Copper is still used. There are UTP copper. I think what is it called? Category 5, Category 6 is also used for high speed communication, like gigabit per second, but not for very long distances. Okay. So the reason single mode is interesting is because it eliminates all the multiple modes, therefore it eliminates delay spread because of that. Okay, but it has the negative side effects. Okay, can we point to the slides, please? So it has it's more difficult to splice, and it's more difficult to couple all the photonic energy, especially if you use like cheaper sources like LEDs, or if you try to use I mean, it's almost impossible to use LEDs with single mode fiber, but you can try to use VCSELs, which are sort of cheaper lasers. For these fellows, it's difficult to couple the photonic energy into this because it's like micron thick, right? I mean, light tends to disperse quickly. And you cannot study it with ray optics. You have to use Maxwell's equations or more detailed photonic optics to study all the effects. As you go higher and higher speeds, you start having more chromatic dispersion, nonlinear effects, which need to be studied, and we shall study some of these things. And the other aspects of the fiber, this is the light matter interaction, which becomes important at this. And there are also temperature dependence at higher and higher things. Okay, so this is why you need to use lasers which are cooled, and I mean these are known as packaging issues with lasers. Okay, so these issues become significant at higher speeds and longer distances. Okay, that's the bottom line. And when you take a mode, normally when we think of the ray optics, we talk about total internal reflection and so on. And here we are talking about a single mode that is transmitting on the axis of the fiber. Okay, but as you know, there is something known as Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. You can never pin down exactly where light is. Okay, so in effect, there is a zone, and there's some uncertainty about where the light energy is. You know it's propagating, you know it's there, but there's some uncertainty about it. Okay, so, and that you can study using quantum mechanics. Essentially what it say, the bottom line is that there's some energy in the core, but there's also some energy in the cladding. Okay, and the degree of energy in the core and cladding varies over time. Okay, and also so essentially all you can do is you can form a probability distribution, and this is a field amplitude. Okay, and the square of this is the probability distribution of how the energy is distributed between core and cladding. Okay, and these effects are important because the very fact that there is some energy, also known as evanescent field, in the cladding, you use that fact to couple energy. If you want to create couplers and splitters and so on, you actually use the fact that there is some energy in the cladding for that. Okay, so if you keep another waveguide which is less than one wavelength away, from it. Okay, so some energy will be coupled between these two things. Okay, and we shall look at some of these things later. Okay, so it's important for you to just realize that it's not just a single ray that's propagating here. It's some uncertain thing that is propagating. Okay, so we will now spend some time on dispersion issues. Okay, and the simplest way to understand dispersion is that if a tall, thin person, which is a pulse, which is going into the fiber, what comes out is a short, fat person. Okay, and therefore these things will start to merge. Okay, persons don't merge, but signals do. Okay, so beyond a point you cannot recognize. Okay, it's almost like they are one continuum. Okay, so this is the way to think about it. Okay, so there are multiple reasons for dispersion, and there are chromatic and modal. We saw some of this. So chromatic dispersion is not a big deal for small bit rates. If you are not interested in higher than 2.5 gigabit per second or less than 500 kilometer single mode fibers, you don't really think about it. Okay, it's only for these high rates or or longer distances. Okay. Okay, so here's the idea. If I have an impulse entering the fiber, it exits, which is spread out, and I think what is more important, it's also becomes short because of attenuation. Okay, this part is not shown. I think this is shown here. Okay, so the signal actually degrades. It looks like this, and it can actually look much smaller, and you'll have some uncertainty about what is the signal, which is different. Okay, here's another figure, because at the receiver side you'll have a decision threshold to determine whether you're talking about a 0 or 1. Because these pulses spread, you will have some uncertainty about the decision. You can make bit errors. That's what's happening. And this is an irreducible bit error rate. Okay, so the signal to noise ratio degrades so far, you just can't increase signal power and try to get away with it. Okay, so there's a pulse spreading cannot be combated by increasing signal power, whereas attenuation can be combated by increasing signal power. So you really have to deal with this dispersion if you want to go higher bit rate. Okay, so how do you combat it? First thing you can do is, there are two things you can do to combat it. Okay, first you can make better fibers, and the other thing you can do is make better light sources and better detectors. Okay, so we'll primarily focus on how to make better fibers. Okay, so the standard trick is essentially you shape the refractive index profile of the fiber. Okay, so if I have a multimode fiber, it's also known as multimode step index, that there's a step of the index. Index is higher always in the core compared to the cladding, slightly higher. This difference is not a big deal at all. It's almost like a third decimal place or second decimal place difference in the refractive index, but still it's a step. Okay, so if I grade it like this profile, then essentially you have a multimode graded index. And if you notice in a step index, single mode, it's also very small. Okay, the refractive index differences are much smaller than multimode fiber. Okay, so what is the effect? If you look at it in a ray optic sense, the number of modes is reduced in a multimode fiber. Okay, and also the delay spread, that is the difference between. So basically, one simple way to think about it is that some of these modes travel longer distance compared to the other modes. Therefore, there is distance is exactly the same as phase. Okay, if you travel longer distance, you'll be out of phase by so much time. Okay, distance causes difference in time because if you convert that bit based on the speed of light. Okay, now essentially what you do is you make these modes travel in a sort of curved trajectory. Because you do that, the distance difference between different curves is not significant. Okay, so it actually reduces the delay spread, because it reduces the distance spread in terms of how far the mode travels. Okay, so that is the trick which is done. And graded index means that you see the refractive index as you go away from the core to the cladding changes based upon that profile we saw. Okay, so you reduce the delay spread, but still this trick cannot work at very, very long distances. It's only used for reasonably short distances, a few tens of kilometers max. So these numbers essentially are measured by delay spread is measured as how much nanosecond spread you see if you travel for a kilometer. Okay, and so if you have a 1% index difference, it can cause 1 to 5 nanosecond per kilometer delay spread, and a step index will give you a 50 nanosecond per kilometer spread. Okay. Now, this 50 nanosecond means that if I go 1 kilometer and my bit length, that is the amount of time my bit takes 50 nanoseconds. Okay, you have to do some simple calculations, like 20, yeah, it's about 20 or so megabit per second. So, I mean, so the problem is that you cannot go higher and higher bit rate because the time for each bit becomes smaller, and this will start interacting with it. Okay, so what you do is these multimode fibers and all are used for small bit rates, like 100 megabit per second for small kilometers. So as you go for longer and longer distance, you cannot do much. Either you keep amplifying it all the time, or you have to go for single mode fiber. Okay, so we now assume that we are going to use single mode fiber. And if you use single mode fiber and you want to go high bit rates, there is a new form of dispersion called chromatic dispersion. Okay, and you can simply understand it as though there is a race, okay, there's a running race between different wavelengths, okay. So different wavelengths start off at the same time, okay, these are different colors, and your impulse energy is distributed between them, okay. You see here, okay, this is a Fourier analysis, and then when they go through a dispersive fiber, they have traveled at different speeds, okay. And then when you sort of combine them back, and look at the output pulse, it's spread out. Okay, and you can say that since because this group of wavelengths travels at different speeds, this is also sometimes called group velocity dispersion, or GVD. Okay, this is a common word used. Okay, and it's characterized by a parameter called beta. Okay, it's called beta to just assume that it's a parameter we'd like. And this beta 2 is a GVD parameter. And it has two subcomponents. Okay, the chromatic dispersion occurs because of a fundamental problem in the material. Okay, so the material silica itself has some frequency-dependent refractive index. Okay, so because of the crystalline structure and so on and so forth, the refractive index depends upon frequency. Okay, so different frequencies have different refractive index, and remember, the meaning of refractive index is that light travels at different speeds. Okay, so if my different frequency or different wavelength has a different refractive index, it means I will travel faster or slower. Okay, and the other part is that the light energy, as I said, has a component in the core and in the cladding. Okay, now the actual degree of energy or power spectrum which sits in the core and the cladding, that also is a function of wavelength. Okay. So how much of this energy is in the core and cladding? And this essentially, as there is a different distribution of power in the core and cladding, there is an effective refractive index for this whole wavefront. Okay. And this effective refractive index will sort of change both with time as well as wavelength. So there's an effective refractive index which lies between the two, and this dispersion, because it's sometimes known as a waveguide dispersion. Okay. So it turns out that this you cannot do anything about, but this you can manage. Okay, so we will see that to combat chromatic dispersion, people take aim at waveguide dispersion, and you engineer that. Okay, so there are two regimes of chromatic dispersion. One is known as a normal dispersion, when the GVD parameter is positive, and anomalous dispersion, when the GVD parameter is negative. And for the basic fiber, or what is known as standard single mode fiber, you have anomalous dispersion in this window which we are interested in, which is 1.55 micrometer. Okay, so let's look at what is the effect of this. What happens is that, we will learn about something called solitons a little bit later in this class. Okay, and before we understand that, we need to understand something known as some Gaussian pulses. Okay, maybe I should use this diagram later on. Suppose I have a pulse that is not just a one. Okay, but it actually is like this. Okay, its amplitude, it's an oscillating thing, and the amplitude changes with time like this. Okay, so this is a Gaussian pulse. Okay, now when this has transmitted for some distance, okay, you will see that there is some effect on this pulse. Okay, and what the effect is known as chirping. Okay, and the chirping essentially means that some part of the pulse, okay, some frequency components of the pulse have changed. Okay, so here you see that this pulse has the same frequency here, but if you look at the pulse in time, some part of the pulse has a different frequency and the different part of the pulse has a different frequency. Okay, and this phenomena that is within a small time window, if you see some frequency differences, it is known as chirping. Okay, so chromatic dispersion can cause chirping in Gaussian pulses. Okay, we should look at this thing. So what you can, people have done has, they have studied carefully what are the pulse shapes for which, even if chromatic dispersion does its thing, I will get my information across. Okay, so this is very important from modulation perspective. So the idea of chirping is that the frequency of the launch pulse changes with time. And this chirping can occur not only because of chromatic dispersion, it can also occur as you are trying to modulate a laser. If you try to internally modulate a laser, it will also create negative chirping. Okay, negative chirping I think I showed here. Okay, so negative chirping is this part. So you see that there is some frequency changes, increased frequency in this early part of the pulse. Okay. Now, the combination of the particular value of beta, that is the anomalous dispersion, and negative chirping, okay, in particular this product k times beta 2, if it's negative, it will cause pulse broadening. Okay, so essentially the bottom line is that the actual effect of chromatic dispersion on pulse broadening depends upon multiple factors. It depends upon what is the dispersion regime you are in. Is it anomalous or normal dispersion? What is the kind of pulse you're launching into the fiber? Is it a normal basic pulse or is it like a Gaussian pulse? Or the pulse itself is negatively chirped as it gets into the system and so on. Okay. So it turns out that if I use a positive chirp with the anomalous dispersion, I actually have an advantage. Okay. And we shall study and we shall use this idea to develop the idea for soliton. Okay, so, and there's a parameter which is called dispersion length, okay, and the idea of this parameter is that if this dispersion length is, say, for example, 1,800 kilometers, if my actual fiber distance is much smaller than this distance, I don't have to think about chromatic dispersion. That is the basic idea. So, given a bit rate, like say OC48, given a length, a particular window, you can define what is the chromatic, what is the dispersion length. Okay, so for OC48 at 1.55 micrometer, this length is 1,800 kilometers. Okay, and which means that I don't have to worry about chromatic dispersion in this regime. But if I want to use OC192, which is 10 gigabit per second, my length suddenly becomes 155 kilometers. Okay, which means if I want to have fiber lengths of 100 kilometers, I really need to worry about dispersion. Okay, chromatic dispersion. Okay, so the bottom line is the chromatic dispersion is important at high bit rates, especially going to 10 gigabit per second. Okay, so some kinds of chirp pulses may actually compress. Remember that pulses can broaden, that's what dispersion is about. Some kinds of chirp pulses, like positively chirp pulses on an anomalous dispersion regime, may actually compress for a while, that is, if it goes to some distance, and after that it will start expand. Okay, it's weird, okay. The pulses actually compress and then expand. Okay. So people use the fact that depending upon these parameters, pulses might compress and so on to actually develop fibers. Okay, Corning has a fiber called MetroCore fiber, which say that which is used in metro area networks because you don't want to put expensive amplifiers in metro networks. And this has a particular value of beta such that if you launch this kind of pulses, you don't even have to do any amplification. The pulse will hang out for the entire fiber length. Because of the fact that chromatic dispersion cannot kill it, or in the sense of positive dispersion, because of the way the fiber is designed. Okay, so there's a funny thing, okay. So the 1.3 micrometer band, we said was bad for attenuation. But if you look at the dispersion regimes, 1.2 micrometer band is in some sense better. Okay. Because it falls in the normal dispersion regime, this crossing of zero is what causes anomalous dispersion. And 1550 nanometer band falls in the anomalous dispersion regime, and also this magnitude of this is high. Okay, so what people have done is they have, designed fibers such that they pull this curve down. How do they do that? They look at chromatic chromatic dispersion, which is caused by material, and the waveguide dispersion, and then they pull the waveguide dispersion down, such that the sum of these two things is pulled down. Okay, so that is called a dispersion shifted fiber, because you shift the point of zero dispersion to the 1500 nanometer band. Okay, so that is the idea. Okay, so things are not just that simple. Okay, and there are other complex things we shall talk about. So dispersion shifted fiber is deployed a lot in Japan and less deployed in the United States, but it was designed to combat chromatic dispersion by essentially shifting the nice, see, in the attenuation we like to look at those troughs in terms of attenuation, whereas in dispersion I like to look at where the zero dispersion and the slow dispersion regime occurs. Okay, so that dispersion regime can be managed by changing the refractive index profile again. So instead of having a step profile, if I have some sort of a trapezoidal profile, I can actually create, I can shift the zero chromatic dispersion point into the 1550 nanometer band rather than the 1.2 band. Okay, 1550 nanometer exactly is zero dispersion, and around it you have negative dispersion and positive dispersion. So the average value is some very small number, 3.3. Okay, and there's another version called a dispersion compensating fiber, which you shall not learn about. Okay, so the old fibers were all non-dispersion shifted fibers, okay, or also sometimes called standard single mode fibers, okay, and when this figure was done, it was about 95%, okay, but there's been more of dispersion shifted fibers out there. So we learnt about zero dispersion shifted fiber. Okay, there's also another fancy thing known as non-zero dispersion shifted fiber, because you don't want exactly zero dispersion. You want a small amount of residual chromatic dispersion, and we shall understand why that is the case when we learn about nonlinear effects in the 1550 nanometer band. Okay, and these are becoming more popular at this point. Okay, another way to combat dispersion is to sort of reverse the effect of dispersion. Remember, what is the dispersion? You have a pulse that is spread, right? So if I can develop a component or a black box here that will take a spread pulse and make it smaller, sort of compress the pulse, okay, and that will be cool, right? So that is called a dispersion compensating module, okay, and you can do this by multiple techniques, okay? You can actually do this by making use of diffraction, okay, and we shall develop the idea of a Bragg grating in the next class. And there is something known as in-fiber Bragg grating, and if you carefully design that, you can actually reflect out. Essentially, what you can this thing will do is, when I see particular wavelengths, I will make it actually travel a longer distance briefly, okay, and then it compensates for this, and by the time the light goes out of this component, the spread has been reduced, because some of these wavelengths have traveled a longer distance as part of this module, and effectively you have compensated for that effect. Okay, I'll not talk about this thing. Okay, the other next idea in light is the notion of polarization. Okay, so we have looked at idea of dispersion, which is a light matter interaction phenomenon. We've talked about attenuation, which has subcomponents of absorption and scattering. And we've also talked about diffraction, which we shall learn more about in the next class. The other aspect of light is something known as polarization. Okay, polarization, if you take light as electromagnetic waves, you have an electric wave and a magnetic wave, okay, or an electric field and magnetic field that are oscillating. Okay, now electric field and magnetic field are usually called transverse waves, because there's no energy in the longitudinal direction or the axial direction. There's all the energy is in the transverse direction, transverse plane. So that's why it's called transverse electromagnetic wave. Okay, but now the concentration of energy. Okay, so now in the transverse plane, you can think of a vector ex ey. Okay, and you can think of this as a vector, polarization vector, and says, which captures what is the energy distribution in terms of the x-axis and the y-axis. Now, as this light interacts with matter, this polarization or the distribution of energy between the x-axis and y-axis can change. As the light propagates, say light propagates through vacuum, right? And you have, say, all the energy of the electric field is in the x-axis. Okay, so as it propagates, it will not change. Okay, so this is known as linearly polarized. Whichever direction light has all its energy, that direction will just stay put. Okay, so it's known as linearly polarized. So as you propagate, if the sort of vector of polarization or the distribution of energy does not change, then it's known as linearly polarized. So, but this energy can change. Okay, so there are fancy things known as circular polarization, elliptical polarization, which essentially show how the light, the polarization vector changes over time. Okay, and light doesn't stay still with time; it moves, right? So you see the effect of linear polarization is that all the energy is in a plane, okay, which is known as the polarization plane or plane of polarization, and even though light energy oscillates, it remains in that plane. Whereas if I have circular polarization, this energy vector keeps turning, okay, and the light also keeps moving, okay. So the light energy distribution actually goes in this weird sort of direction, okay. So it has this sort of helical shape in which the energy distribution actually changes. Okay, if you take a cross section of fiber and see those speckle patterns, actually you'll see them actually playing all kinds of beautiful dances because of the way the polarization changes. Okay, so any property of light or any light matter interaction phenomena, you can either be affected by or you can take advantage of. Okay, so polarization can be a good thing or bad thing. Okay, and there are some particular materials which affect polarizations. Okay, and these are sometimes known as polarizing filters. Okay, so I don't know if you use some particular type of glasses, right? Those actually, it is known that some particular type of polarization is bad for the eyes, and some particular types of polarization are good for the eyes. So you have glasses that block ultraviolet light. Okay, they essentially absorb ultraviolet light, and they also let in only particular types of polarizations. Okay, and that's exactly what I'm showing here. It's a polarizing filter, and that depends upon the particular material that's used to do the coating. Okay, so polarizing filter can take an unpolarized light, because if it is incoherent light, if I have coherent light that is created by laser, it will have over time it will have the same polarization. Okay, whereas if I have incoherent light like an LED or light emitting detector that basically sends light by spontaneous emission, and light comes from random direction, random polarizations, that is, I mean, you cannot fix its polarization. I mean, it's in all directions. Okay, but now if you pass it through this filter, basically it will absorb all the polarizations except for one particular direction. So the light which comes out here is polarized. It only has particular direction. And another aspect of it is you also eat up the energy. Okay, so it's a good thing or a bad thing depending upon your point of view. Okay, so if you want the energy and you don't care about polarization, then you are in trouble. Whereas if you care about the polarization, you don't, and you can live with the fact that some of the energy is absorbed here, then it's a good thing. Okay. So essentially there are other materials which actually can do some rotation of polarization. If I have a polarization this way, as it goes through the crystalline structure of the material, okay, there are something known as half wave blocks and quarter wave blocks, and these particular birefringent blocks can actually rotate your polarizations, okay, and by different angles, okay, and these, some of these were discovered by Faraday, and these are therefore known as Faraday rotators, okay. So you can combine these things in a fancy way to develop optical components, okay. So one beautiful optical component that you can develop is known as an isolator, okay. Isolator basically allows light energy to go in one way, but it blocks it the other way. Why would I want to do this? Because some other optical components known as Bragg gratings and so on will reflect light, and you don't want that to come and mess up your laser, which is doing that. So you might want to have reflectors, okay, or isolators, I'm sorry. How can you do that? You can do that by just taking advantage of polarization. So suppose you have an incident wave that has polarization on the x-axis, okay, here the x-axis in the high direction. So, or if you have unpolarized light, only the x-axis polarization will get through, okay, and this is denoted by this sort of arrow here. And then you put a rotator, Faraday rotator here, which will sort of shift its polarization by an angle, and you have another polarizer, which is a 45 degree polarizer, it will go this way. Okay, so light which comes in here goes this way. Whereas if you have reflected light, okay, essentially the 45 degree polarized, it will come back here, but then the rotator will rotate it by another 45 degrees, so the polarization will be on the y-axis, and when it hits the first polarizer, which will only let light through, which is on the x-axis polarization, this light will be killed. So therefore, the light which went out cannot come back. and that is the building block called an optical isolator. Okay, so the idea here is every concept of light or every effect of light can be taken advantage of to design optical components. Okay. Okay, so other aspects of polarization are that polarization becomes an issue not at slow speeds. It becomes an issue only at 10 gigabit per second and high. Today people are developing 40 gigabit per second transmissions on particular wavelengths, okay, on few wavelengths. So in this case, the effect of polarization becomes important. Okay, polarization also causes a type of dispersion because energy is in different polarizations, right? So it turns out that the material refractive index can depend on polarization. Okay, it's a weak effect. It only occurs at very, very high frequencies, okay, or high bit rates. So, and this kind of dispersion is known as polarization dispersion or polarization mode dispersion. Okay, and essentially these effects also occur at high intensities. Okay, the refractive index can depend upon intensity, it can depend upon frequency, it can depend on polarization, but all these things only show up at very, very high bit rates. Okay, so that's the basic idea. And the polarization is described by a polarization vector or the state of polarization. Okay, so there is a sort of little bit of confusion. If you read the textbook carefully, there are two issues with polarization. The material itself has a polarization known as a dielectric polarization, and the light electromagnetic wave itself has a polarization, which is what I'm referring to. Okay, so you should not get confused about dielectric polarization. Okay, so there are crystals known as birefringent crystals. Essentially what they do is they basically resolve the polarizations of input waves. Okay, if I have an input ray which has an x-axis polarization, a y-axis polarization, this will essentially do a resolution for you. It's like if you take a coordinate plane, if you have a vector, you want to figure out what is the x-component and y-component. You can figure that out by passing it through this crystal. Okay, so it will give you one ray which is known as an ordinary ray. I don't know for what reason, but there's another ray which is known as an extraordinary ray. Okay, which is, these are essentially different axes. This is the component of the light energy which is in the different polarizations can be resolved by this. Okay, birefringent crystals are a special case of materials which are known as anisotropic. Okay, isotropy, like silica is isotropy, it is a derived property of a material which is highly symmetric. Okay, silica, the molecular structure is highly symmetric. Therefore, its properties or its light properties or light matter interaction properties are very symmetric in all directions. Okay, so if you take this x-axis, y-axis, z-axis and ask what is the refractive index in this direction versus the index in these directions, okay. So the refractive index is not some magical thing. It occurs because light interacts with the molecular particles, and if you have different distributions of molecules and different symmetries in different directions, the refractive index or the speed of light and the other issues will differ in different directions. And they will also differ with time, they will also differ with, how the material is, and will differ with frequency and so on. So anisotropic materials have this property that they don't have equal refractive index in all directions. That's the simplest way to understand it. The good news, the silica is isotropic, okay? So that's why it's used to make fiber. The cylindrical shape also affects isotropy. If you use some other shape, like if you use a slab, or a rectangular, and that type of shape, it will also make you have different refractive index in different direction. Okay, and this idea is used. That's why fiber is cylindrical. Okay, it's not like in waveguides which are used internal to, even today they are trying to use optical communication within chips, etc. So these kinds of things, the waveguides are made out of slabs and so on, so they have to worry about the fact that these have birefringence or anisotropy effects. Okay. Now, we will look later at a material called lithium niobate, which is actually used for designing tunable filters, isolators, modulators, high-speed modulators, are created using the anisotropy, and these properties can actually be changed by applying electric field, magnetic field, or even acoustic waves. You can apply RF waves or even sound waves and change these properties, and you can control them. And as you can control them, you can modulate them, you can actually filter things, and so on. Okay, and we shall see how these things can be done. Okay, so as light impinges on a birefringent crystal, it is basically resolved into its x-axis and y-axis. That's how this basically thing will look. So polarization and dispersion is that if you have one axis and the other axis and you have light energy there, and each axis travels at a different speed because of the dependence of refractive index on these polarization modes, the total power will start getting dispersed. Okay, this is a good way of thinking about it. So even though this might stay linear, you see that the power is being dispersed. So this is called polarization mode dispersion, not to be confused with polarization dependent loss. Okay, loss means it's an attenuation effect due to polarization, and dispersion means a pulse spreading effect due to dispersion. And both of these become dominant as we go to 10 gigabit per second and higher. Okay, we will not study this in great detail, but this is what is happening. Okay, there's another figure which shows you exactly the same same idea, where you have the input pulse, which has energies in different polarization modes, and these things, because they travel at different speeds, and you sort of sum them up, they will have a pulse spread. Okay, so to see what we've gotten so far, we've looked at several linear effects. Okay, now if you read the chapter 2 of Kumar Shivarajan, the first few sections, he'll make several assumptions about fibers. Okay, the first assumption is linearity. Okay, the other assumption is isotropy. Okay, several of these are reasonable assumptions. Okay, and there are several other assumptions which are made. Okay, now you can have one of these assumptions violated while other assumptions are kept constant. Like you can have an isotropic medium, but you can still have non-linearity of the medium. Okay, now non-linearity of the medium essentially means that your refractive index is related to something known as the susceptibility of the medium to the electric field. Okay, so the light matter interaction can be described by the dielectric polarization, and that depends upon these parameters, and these are all related to refractive index. Okay, now if this thing is not a linear thing, okay, so like this basically you can describe this as a convolution, which is a linear phenomena. Okay, now beyond a point, this linearity is violated. That is, the points at which the linearity violated, there are several reasons why this occurs. Either you use high power, if you go beyond a few milliwatt in terms of your laser powers, remember that lasers can operate at very low powers in the order of milliwatts. You can also have ultra high power lasers which operate kilowatts. Okay, but when you're using for optical communication, you're talking about milliwatts and so on. But there are some nonlinear effects which occur at higher, when you go tens of milliwatts and 50 milliwatts and so on, you have nonlinear effects. Some nonlinear effects occur only when you do at watts. Okay, the Raman effect occurs only when you do at a few watts. And bit rates, if you're doing at small bit rates, then they don't occur. Okay, only at very high bit rates they occur. Okay, why do we care about nonlinear effects? Okay, because you can use them for your advantage. As well as they cause you a disadvantage, you have to worry about and you're trying to do channel spacing and trying to do wave division multiplexing, but they also have a positive effects. Okay, now so you want to look out for nonlinear effects at high bit rates and high powers. Okay, and also high packing density of channels. Okay, so the canonical packing density of channels is that you pack one channel and the other channel is about 100 gigahertz away from it. Okay, and you have a sort of say Gaussian profile of the signal and which you transmit on it, which dies on, there's a huge guard band basically. Now, if you make these channels come closer and closer to each other, okay, if you make it 50 gigahertz and 25 gigahertz channel spacing, okay, now you start getting to trouble. Okay, remember 25 gigahertz and you're transmitting 10 gigabit per second, okay, that itself is about 0.6 bits per hertz, okay, in terms of efficiency. So you would think this is lousy efficiency, but now you start having other optical effects, like these nonlinear effects which pop up because of that. Okay, we'll look at this. And there are two categories of this. Okay, light can interact with matter. Okay, and there are photons and phonons, which is actually an acoustic phenomenon. Well, these are sort of molecular vibration issues, and they can cause effects. And some of these are called scattering effects, because what happens is the light energy can go in different directions. Okay, or it can go in different wavelengths. Okay, you have light energy which came in one wavelength, it will suddenly go in different wavelength, and that different wavelength, that energy which has been coupled to a different wavelength, can go in the forward direction and the different reverse direction. Okay, so this is a simple way to think about it. Okay, and these, we'll look at two effects. Okay, one is known as the Raman effect, okay, or stimulated Raman scattering. Okay, and there's another effect known as the Brillouin effect. Okay, and it's called stimulated brilliant scattering. And the other aspect is that as you increase the light intensity, so this has, this also depends upon intensity, but this is another effect. As you increase light intensity, the refractive index directly depends upon light intensity. Okay, besides all the other factors. And this causes some self-phase modulation and four-wave mixing. Okay, these become very, very important at high, at for wave division multiplexing. Okay, so how do we understand these effects? So these two effects, SRS and SBS, okay, the Raman or brilliant effects, the simple way to understand is that energy which is in one wavelength is transmitted to another wavelength. Okay, and this other wavelength, okay, or this other wave is called the Stokes wave. Okay, and this can be in the forward direction or the reverse direction. And the first wave is known as the pump wave. Okay, and we shall look at this word pump again and again because it occurs in optical amplifiers. You want to do this intentionally. You want to put a lot of energy in the pump wavelength, and you want this energy to be transferred to your signal wavelength. Okay, and this we see in the Raman effect. Okay, so you actually introduce a pump laser with a high power wave in it, and the Stokes wave into which the power gets coupled because the Raman effect or the nonlinear effect is actually the signal which you wanted to amplify in the first place. Okay, so it's a beautiful way of amplifying the signal. And this is a broadband effect, which means it can occur over a very, very long, very broad frequency range. That is why when I drew the Raman amplifier diagram, this Raman effect can be used to amplify a very large range of wavelengths. Okay. And SBS, on the other hand, is a narrowband effect, and it's actually, you can also create amplifiers with the narrowband amplifiers with it. Essentially you try to get rid of it by having small line widths and so on. That's why you prefer to use laser rather than an LED, which has a more broader spectral width for this. Okay, so the simple idea is that the pump loses its power as it propagates through the fiber, the length of the fiber, and the Stokes wave gets the power. Okay, now the Stokes wave can go in the forward direction and reverse direction. Remember, there's also sometimes some scattering. Remember, when the diagram of scattering means that light comes here and goes this direction, okay, or this goes, or some random direction. Okay, but typically here it's just a single mode, right, so it can go forward or reverse. Okay, so the wave can come in the forward direction or reverse direction and so on. So these can cause different paths of the wavelength, the spectrum can get attenuated or it can get amplified and so on and so forth. So we'd like to understand this. Okay, so how do we understand this? There are two parameters. One is known as a gain coefficient. It measures the strength of the effect. I mean, how much amplification or how much attenuation is there. And the spectral width over which the gain is present. And at what spectrum do you get more gain, less gain, etc. Okay, so this is the idea. So the first effect, the Raman effect, it's very simple to understand. A shorter wavelength source has higher energy. Okay, so the way to understand that is following. Okay, so a photon energy is, can I point here please, h nu. Okay, and you know this, right, E is equal to h nu. Okay, now h c by lambda. So if I reduce lambda, I go for shorter wavelength, I will have higher energy. It's the same photon, it's a particle which has discrete energy, which depends upon the wavelength of that particle. Okay, it's particle has a wavelength. Okay, there's a wave-particle duality idea. So if I have a smaller wavelength particle, photon, okay, it's a light energy-carrying particle, it will have higher energy. Each particle will have higher energy. Okay, so now that's the idea. So if I take a short wavelength pump, okay, so I'm having a stream of photons which is coming from it. Each photon has a quanta or a packet of energy, and this packet is larger, okay, because the fact that the wavelength is smaller. Okay, that's the basic idea. So now what happens is that atoms which are existing, there's a matter, right, there are atoms over here, like silica atoms are here, and this photon comes and interacts with these atoms. Okay, and one phenomena as these wavelengths interact is that they are excited to a higher energy level. Okay, now this excitation can mean several things. Okay, the atoms themselves are excited and they go to a higher energy level in the sense they absorb the energy. Okay, they are in particular electrons which are sitting in one band can go to another band. These are sometimes charge carriers which sit in one band can go to another band. And as I said, these are solutions of sort of differential equations at particular boundary conditions. So these are discrete energy levels. Okay, so there are discrete energy levels. So if the short wavelength shows up, you can have atoms at one energy level at a, say, a low energy level, and you absorb it and show up at the high energy level. So this is absorption phenomenon. Okay, but when they are at this high energy level, they are not very stable. So these are sometimes known as metastable. They have a lifetime there. They hang out there for some time, and then they spontaneously give their thing back. Okay, but these atoms at this high energy level did not appear there by magic. Okay, they actually absorbed, and they were stimulated by a short wavelength source, which is the pump source, the Raman pump source. They went to the high energy, and instead of coming back directly to the prior energy state, they might have some other intermediate energy states. Okay, this depends upon the particular atoms we are talking about. And they might actually jump here to the lower energy state. And in this process, right, whenever they go from one energy state to the other energy state, they emit a photon. Okay? And this photon energy which is emitted, or the package, amount of energy that's contained in this photon, depends upon the band gap. Okay, so this energy is smaller, therefore this stimulated emission is at a higher wavelength. Remember that now I have a smaller energy package, which means I have to emit at a higher wavelength. So to give you an idea, right, it's very funny. Okay, so if you shine, say, blue light at this material, okay, this is the way to think about it, it will send red light out of it. Okay, what has happened? You've had energy which is coupled from a higher, from a smaller wavelength which is blue to a higher wavelength which is red. That's the way of thinking about it. Okay, don't take these colors literally. Okay, so that is the basic idea. And what about the remaining energy? It will not hang out in this intermediate energy level also for too long. It will come down here, but the residual energy is basically lost as lattice vibrations. Okay, and these energies are known as phonons. Okay, so this is some sort of a vibration, mechanical vibration thing. And that is sometimes called a phonon. Okay, so essentially this is lost, and you have converted the energy from one to another. So there is something like a friction type loss, and then the remaining stuff, you have some energy conversion from one wavelength to the other. Okay, and that is the Raman effect. Okay, so the Raman effect says that as you hit this material with this pump at a particular, beyond a threshold of an energy, I mean in intensity, it will start exciting the atoms, and you will start creating this. Okay, so there's a probability that this will happen. Okay, it will not do it for every atom. Okay, so it will do it for several atoms, and it depends. Okay, so the stimulated emission can occur at different wavelengths depending upon the band gaps of that material. Okay, so if the material has multiple band gaps and so on, you can come to different intermediate level states, and then go back and throw another phone on. Okay. So that is why this is known as a broadband effect. Broadband effect means that the stimulated emission can occur at multiple wavelengths. Okay? So this is the idea. So what has happened is that you have a photon atom interaction, or it's sometimes also known as a photon atom photon interaction. So you have a photon hitting an atom going up and coming down and giving you a photon. Okay, this is also sometimes known as stimulated emission. Okay, so let's look at the effect of it. If I have different wavelengths of the same energy coming into the fiber, this effect occurs, what happens is that energy is transferred from the lower wavelengths to the higher wavelengths. So when it comes out, the spectral power spectrum looks like this. Okay, and if you look at the channel separation, that is, where is this energy going? Okay, so if I am the wavelength of here, where is my energy going? Some of my energy is going to another wavelength, maybe 5 terahertz from here, another wavelength is going at this terahertz. So there's a peak here and there's a flat peak, and then it drops. Okay, but this effect is seen for a fairly large spectral distance. So that's why it's known as a broadband effect. Okay, and another important thing is, what is the magnitude of the effect? What is the gain coefficient? In terms of the gain coefficient, is something like 10 to the power of minus 14. So it is actually, the gain is not very, very high. So if you want to get any significant gain, so if you want to transfer significant amount of energy from here to this flat band, like to design an amplifier, you have to really use a high-powered pump. Okay, for Raman effect, you need to use a high-powered pump. Like you have to use pumps which are several watts for Raman effect. Okay, So here's another way to you think about it. So you have energy from a lower wavelength. Initially you had this sort of pulse energy. So the pulse energy is taken from this lower wavelength and added to the higher wavelength pulses. Okay, so this is the effect. Okay, so the other effect is the Brillouin effect. Okay, it's also called stimulated effect. We'll not get into it in greater detail. It's a narrow band effect. So what will happen is that narrow band is a problem because as you are transmitting a pulse, right, its pulse energy is actually in a small band around the center frequency, right? So if you have a narrow band effect, which will sort of interfere with your own pulse, okay, this is also called, it's called crosstalk. Okay, so this will cause a crosstalk. The only way you can combat it is by making the source line width even smaller than the effect. Okay, if it occurs over after 20 megahertz, you want to make sure that your line widths are very small. Okay. Okay. So, and there are some particular conditions when it's dominant. Okay, when the spectral power brightness is very high and it increases beyond the threshold. Okay, I'm going to skip this. Okay, so the other effects are electro-optic refractive index effects. What it means is that if you apply an electric field, depending upon the material, you can have an effect, it can have a change in the refractive index. It can be linear, it's called a Pockels effect, and it can be second order, it's called a Kerr effect. Okay, so I'm going to use this ideas to develop modulators, etc. in the next class. Okay, we'll stop at this point.